Jack and Gloria went back to back, picking off the stickies with single shots that inflicted maximum damage while still preserving as much ammo as possible.
Hand to hand soon. Too close to blast all.
Gloria cast him a glance over her shoulder. She smiled lopsidedly, her strong white teeth almost feral. Her eyes shone wildly in the heat of battle.
Suits me, babe. They'll have to go a long fucking way to get the best of us.
The Warrior Queen holstered her blaster and unsheathed her panga in one smooth motion, left hand replacing the blaster while the right pulled the blade from her thigh. Stepping away from Jack, she raised her head high. For a moment, it was almost as if Gloria's scream had created an oasis of silence and calm around it. To Jack, holstering the python and palming a knife for each hand, it seemed for just a second that the whole world had been stopped by that scream. Then it passed. The Amazons followed their queen, holstering their blasters and drawing their blades.
Damn, this is gonna be fucking bloody.
JB safely stored his blasters before unsheathing his technoknife. The armorer ran a practiced eye over the encroaching horde as the words escaped his lips. There must have been three or four of them for each member of the tribe's company.
Well, we've been in stickier shit.
The hand-to-hand battle began in earnest as the first wave of muties reached the advancing Amazons, who moved forward to meet their foe, gaining momentum for the first strike. First blood went to Tammy. A sticky that had somehow made it through the onslaught without even picking up a scratch was upon her, waving a sharpened tree limb in one fist, the suckered fingers of its free hand reaching for her throat. She could feel its hot, fetid breath as it came within arm's length of her.
Think again, you bastard!
The young warrior merely sidestepped the charge and brought her blade across the mutie's stomach as it lay open to attack. She drove the blade as deep as it would go and sliced across, splitting the beast's abdomen in twain and spilling its intestines onto the plain. They hit the grass in a steaming, twirling mass. Tammy pulled her hand, hot and red with viscera, from out of its stomach and followed her initial thrust with a slash across the throat. The blood-slicked blade sliced through the soft, soapy flesh, mashing the bone, flesh, and tendon into a pulp that caught on the razor-honed blade, tangling as it reached the spinal column. The young woman knew the only safe way to ensure the chill was to sever the head or an internal organ. She exerted all her power, the tendon standing out on her knife arm as she held the sticky back by the shoulder with her free hand. Its spinal column was made of bone as pliable and soft as the rest of its neck and throat, and with one mighty heave, the knife scored through it, severing the nervous system and taking its head off, if not cleanly, at least completely.
Who's next?
Tammy flashed the blade toward the next attacker, sticky blood showering off the end, while the corpse of her first chill slid harmlessly to the ground. All around there were similar scenes. Doc hacked and slashed with a sword stick. Unlike the pangas and machetes used by those around him, Doc's blade was of the finest tempered Toledo steel and hadn't been manufactured to hack and slash. It was a weapon of accuracy. But not here. A simple wound that would disable or kill a normal human or sticky wouldn't be effective on these genetically altered muties. So Doc had to forego his training and use the blade in a bludgeoning manner.
Oh, sagacious Dante, what level of hell is this?
The old man was doing pretty well. His eyes glazed over as his enemy's blood splashed on him, his white hair flying in the momentum of his movement, the tails of his frock coat whirling behind him. In reality, he was in the Deathlands, with altered muties falling before him. But in the mind ravaged by time trawling and torture, Doc became all men in all history fighting for survival. Elsewhere, the battle raged on. Neither Christy nor Mildred were known for their knife skills, and both women were finding the going tough. They had blades with them, handed out earlier in the trip by Margia, but they weren't experts. Somehow, the stickies could sniff this out, almost as if they could smell the apprehension coming off the women.
Gaia, damn it, this can't last forever.
Yeah, but who decides how it ends?
The larger proportion of stickies they attracted left some of the gate warriors free to chill their attackers with ruthless efficiency. Pangas and machetes hacked at heads after first disabling the attackers by severing their suckered hands. The gate women were then able to dispose of the mutants almost on a production line of chilling. It wasn't long before some of them were able to assist Mildred and Christy in disposing of the vast numbers they had clustered around them. Dean and Ryan were fighting back to back, the older Cotter slashing at his enemies with his panga, cleaving skulls and arms with ease. His son fought with equal savagery, if somewhat less efficiently. He wielded his machete with an economy of effort that showed he'd studied Jack's methods when he had watched the albino practice. Behind his father, Dean could almost have been a shadow, with the same sculpted musculature and broad-shouldered build, smaller only because he hadn't yet reached maturity, the curly hair glistening and dripping with sweat. JB was fighting alone, his technoknife wielded with a scientific accuracy that marked him as a mechanically minded man. The savagery of his strokes was controlled, directed at the most vulnerable points on his attackers, to disable and kill with minimal effort. His wiry frame seemed to crackle with electricity. His usual mild-mannered appearance disappeared, and he seemed almost to grow in stature as he fought. The Gate were faring well against the Sticky Army. So far, there had been no fatalities. The Muties might have outnumbered the Amazons, but they didn't have blades or blasters, and though they surrounded the Gate on all sides, they couldn't easily break through their strong defensive formation. There were a number of minor injuries among the Amazons, but nothing that had disabled any of them enough to bring them down and make them vulnerable to chilling. Out in front, Gloria and Jack were setting the best possible example. The soulmate warriors who'd forged a strong bond over the course of the trip were fighting superbly together. Jack's hands were a blur of movement, the lethal leaf-bladed knives slicing through the soft, sticky flesh with little or no resistance, cutting through the vital organs and severing them so that no amount of rapidly clotting blood could prevent death, penetrating eyes and soft flesh to cut into the even softer brain tissue. Those stickies who managed to dodge the flashing blades were met with kicks from his heavy combat boots that snapped necks and limbs, disabling them long enough to fall prey to Gloria's panga. The Gate Queen herself was dispatching more than her fair share. Knowing that Jack was at her back allowed her to take the offensive against the horde of muties. Launching herself forward in a series of flying kicks, she snapped necks and knocked the mutants to the ground, following this with a series of slashing panga moves that severed heads with ferocity. It was a hard battle, but by degrees the horde grew less and less, the Amazons moving outward to gain ground, treading on their foes' corpses, and driving the remaining stickies back and back. Eventually, the enhanced brains of those remaining got the point, and they retreated back across the plain, fleeing into the woodland. Ryan surveyed the carnage.
Fireblast! I thought they'd never stop coming. For a moment, I thought there were more and more coming out of the trees.
Maybe there were. We need to be more than triple red now. We're tired and strung out, and they may have fuck knows how many in that damn forest.
We beat them once, and we can do it again, but only if we rest up now, make camp and set up a guard. They'll need to regroup, too, if they're going to attack again, so we should have some time.
With which, Gloria directed her people to make camp, clear the chilled, and tend to the few minor wounds they'd received. While this transpired, Ryan gathered together his people.
It's not the stickies I'm worried about.
What?
If I'm not mistaken, my dear Ryan, you allude to the fact that our little muty friends were genetically altered.
Right. And if we're approaching the place you've heard of, Doc, then...
Then the danger may not be from stickies.
Night fell on the carnage surrounding the Gate encampment. The chilled stickies' corpses had been gathered and piled together along with kindling to start two large blazes that would cremate the remains and also act as warning beacons for any who might still be lurking in the woodland. Gloria was aware that the flaring fires would alert anyone watching of their position.
But shit, if the stupid works don't know where we are by now, they're no danger anyway.
Camp was set for the night. The canvas and plastic sheets that kept in the heat and reflected light were set up around the small city of tents and wags. Forming a barrier of darkness against the moonlight that reflected across the plain, they were useless as camouflage, but that wasn't their intent. They enclosed the camp and allowed the sentries to keep guard at all points while the tribe rested within. The guards themselves were exposed, as there was nowhere to hide on the flat plain, but there was also no cover for any approaching enemy to make a sneak attack. It seemed that the Gate warriors were assured of a quiet night's rest after battle, but it wasn't to be. It was on the third watch, deep into the night, when the attack came. Margia, JB, Dean, and Tammy were covering the 4 points. The Gate Queen had been resistant to letting her sister stand watch with the Armorer, considering that her now forgotten infatuation with him had been the original source of the feud between the Blonde and Jack. JB, however, had been unconcerned, reasoning that as long as he and Margia took diametrically opposed areas to cover, then there would be no chance of friction. It was both he and his Armorer counterpart who simultaneously raised the alarm. For JB, it happened when he was squatting about 20 yards from the camp's plastic and canvas wall joint. He was looking out in a southwesterly direction, back across the path they'd traversed along the plain. The night had been cold and quiet since he'd been roused to take his turn at the watch, and the boredom was lulling him toward sleep.